Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and I'm delighted to bring you a really something a bit different, but something that runs a little bit close to my heart, because we're going to be talking about some products which are related to fibrotic disease as well as pancreatic cancer. The company is Amplia Therapeutics. The ASX code for all of you out there is ATX. That's ASX code is ATX. Joining me today is Dr. John Lambert. He is the CEO and Managing Director. And Amplia Therapeutics have made some great strides. It's a very exciting time in the development of the company. So sit back and have a listen to all that they're doing at the moment. John, great to see you. We're all a little bit in lockdown, so thank goodness for Zoom.
Thanks, Kerry. It's nice to be with you today. Thank you.
Before we get started, could you just give a brief overview of Amplia Therapeutics for our audience, some of whom will not have heard about you before, and what it is that you're doing? Because you're small, you're growing, and you've got big ambitions. So just a little summary about Amplia.
Sure, yeah. So we're a drug development company based in Melbourne, and the name of our company is derived from the word amplify, because at least in cancer, we hope to amplify through our drugs the effect of other cancer drugs. The assets that we're developing were first invented here in Melbourne at the Cancer Therapeutics Cooperative Research Centre, which is an amalgamation of research institutes, universities, CSIRO, and so forth. And these drugs are intended to target fibrotic diseases, which is essentially a form of scarring that might occur in the lungs or the kidneys or the liver, and other sorts of fibrotic diseases like certain cancers, in particular, pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pancreatic cancer is difficult to treat because it surrounds itself by this protective fibrotic or scar-like shield. And this prevents or shields the tumor, the central tumor, from drugs that are intended to, you know, penetrate and hit the pancreatic cancer tumor.
Why is I guess two questions to me, because it does hit close to home for me. I've got a friend that's had it, and luckily for all of us that love her, has survived, but others that haven't. Why is pancreatic cancer so tricky? And why is innovation so desperately needed? And why not? Like, why haven't we yet been able to crack the code before?
Yeah, well, pancreatic cancer and a couple of other solid forms of cancer are particularly nasty because they're essentially silent killers. You know, they sit there and they grow quietly, and the person who has the cancer doesn't realize they have it until the cancer is quite advanced. So, you know, many patients don't realize that they have pancreatic cancer until it has spread from the pancreas to other parts of their body. And when it's done that, it's particularly difficult to treat. There are drugs already available for pancreatic cancer, but they don't work particularly well. And, you know, they're very sort of strong, intolerable drugs. And the truth of it is that, you know, as of now, about 90% of patients who are diagnosed with advanced pancreatic cancer will tragically not survive more than 5 years after diagnosis.
Yeah.
So there's an urgent need for new drugs for all cancers, but particularly pancreatic cancer.
But you're addressing fibrotic disease as well as pancreatic. What's the connection there?
Correct. So the way these drugs work is they target fibrotic mechanisms, be they around a tumour and protecting that tumour from drugs, or be they just a purely fibrotic disease, which might be one of particular interest to us is pulmonary fibrosis, lung fibrosis.
Yeah, yeah.
So the drugs work the same way in, you know, both illnesses, but they do it by targeting the fibrotic tissue.
Well, you've done a phase one study, and late last year, I think you reached a very important milestone, which was the commencement of that phase one study for, I think it's AMP-495. And that had a lot of support from the market at large. So this week you've done an update on that study. So if you could just give us the latest, because a phase one clinical study is quite a big milestone for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So, yeah, one of the assets that we're developing is a molecule called AMP-945 or AMP-945. Ah, yeah.
I said 495. 945.
Yeah. The news that we've put out this week is that we've just completed the first clinical trial of AMP-945. And that trial has been, a great success, and it, B, sets us up for the next stages of clinical development, which are phase two clinical trials in patients. So, you know, the trial was set up in order to tell us how well AMP-945 is tolerated by human volunteers. This is the first time this drug had ever been into humans.
Wow.
We were also interested to know whether there were any red flags on safety. You know, when humans are dosed with this, are there safety signals that we should be aware of? And, you know, we also wanted to answer the simple question of when AMP-945 is given to a human as a capsule that they swallow by mouth, A, does the drug get into their bloodstream, and B, how much of it gets into the bloodstream, and how long does it stay there for, and does it stay there for, and does it stay there at concentrations that are high enough to hit the target that we want to hit? And, you know, we got a tick next to all those things.
Wow.
The drug turned out to be well tolerated. We didn't find any safety signals that concern us at the doses that we tested the drug at, and we confirm that the drug actually does get into the system, and it will be a convenient product to take, you know, once daily by mouth.
Wow. So it's once daily by mouth. And are you saying, especially with pancreatic cancer, because you said at the beginning there that it's a nasty little one because it hides. Are you saying that taking this tablet once a day, the AMP-945, got it right this time, it can actually find and attack the tumor? I mean, that's... from one tablet, that sounds kind of mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that I didn't probably expand upon properly earlier on in our conversation was that AMP-945 is intended to be given together with current standards of chemotherapy with patients. So we're trying to amplify or improve the effect of those chemotherapy agents. So what we think at the moment is that patients will be taking AMP-945 by mouth at home, but they'll still need to visit the clinic in order to get the, you know, intravenous chemotherapies that they already get. We just hope that those therapies will work better if they're also taking AMP-945.
With the clinical study, you said that it was human trials. Was it a large study? Was it Australia only? Because we're obviously COVID constrained a little bit. Has COVID impacted on those trials at all?
That's an interesting question, because we really did expect that, you know, COVID was going to make life difficult for us in recruiting this clinical trial. There were a couple of, you know, small hiccups during recruitment, but overall we managed to recruit the trial of 56 volunteers entirely here in Melbourne within the time window that we set ourselves. So, yeah, there were some things to manage, you know, that were related to COVID. But, you know, that's what clinical development's like. There's always something that you need to be able to respond to. And, you know, experience tells you that you just need to be ready. But, yeah, we recruited the trial on time.
Because there's a lot of drug companies, pharmaceutical, biotech companies out there. Has it... I guess my question is, you're amplifying, as you said at the beginning, but I'm curious as to how much work went into it and how long it's taken to get to this point, and where to from here. Is there a long road in front before it gets into, I guess, the general populace as a drug?
I mean, first of all, you're right, Kerry. There's a lot of work that goes on, you know, before being able to dose, you know, humans in a phase one trial. We started that trial in October last year, but before that you know, we had to manufacture enough AMP-945 that was a sufficient quality for humans to take. We had to do some really detailed toxicology studies to show that AMP-945 appeared safe to put into humans. You know, and prior to that, at the Cancer Therapeutics CRC, AMP-945 had to be selected from hundreds of other potential candidates. And over the course of this journey, of course, we're really grateful to our investors for sticking with us while we work through those preliminary activities before we hit the milestone of starting the phase one.
And that's a critical milestone, isn't it? Because there are a lot of drugs out there that actually do not make it to this point in time. So getting to this milestone is a big tick, correct?
That's right. You know, in drug development, we refer to the so-called valley of death, you know, where, you know, drugs that look good as development candidates go into the early stages of development. And in those early stages of development, a lot of drugs fail. You know, there are, you know, and so, you know, there's always the potential for drugs to fail as they go through clinical development. But, you know, getting into the clinic with a new potential therapy is always a big milestone and a big achievement.
Amplia have got a lot of partnerships. Your background is a lot of R&D, a lot of research and development, and you're working, I think, with the Garvan Institute. Can you talk to us, to our investor audience, about your partnerships and who you're working with? Because I think that that's an important part of the company.
Yes, it is. And it will be for years to come. Drug development is a team sport, and you need a lot of different skills and expertise to, you know, take a drug from invention through to the market. You know, the Garvan collaboration, I think it's a real coup for both Amplia and the Garvan. Amplia benefits from the expertise of, you know, researchers like Paul Timpson and his really excellent colleagues up there, and, you know, everything they know about the target that we are trying to hit. While, you know, for the Garvan, they get to see their basic scientific research translated, hopefully, into clinical benefits by way of Amplia's clinical development program. So, you know, it really is a win-win, that collaboration. Now, we've already shown that AMP-945 improves the efficacy of certain standards of care in pancreatic cancer in the disease models that Paul Timpson's group use. And going forward, we want to expand that collaboration and look at other therapies, you know, other combinations in other cancers, and, you know, see just how far we can go.
So that's the interesting bit, isn't it? So this particular drug, at the moment, it's pancreatic, but you're saying it could potentially amplify the efficacy of other treatments.
Correct. And we're looking at all that at the moment as well. We've got to focus our resources primarily on pancreatic cancer at the moment. But, you know, in the background, we're looking at other opportunities, and we'll be following up on those, if, you know, as they arise.
Okay, so let's talk about the timetable, John. You've done phase one successfully.
Yep.
I guess it's phase two now, you know. And what is that involved in taking AMP-945 to phase two? What's that look like? And how? What's the timeline?
Yep. So we're pushing hard to get AMP-945 into phase two clinical trials, where we will test it in patients around the end of 2021. There's a lot to do in order to do things like finalise the clinical trial design, manufacture the drug that will be required, bring the various clinics up to speed, and get the regulatory approvals in place. But, you know, we've set ourselves the target of getting that trial up and running around the end of this year.
And at the end of the year that comes in, and what's the timeline for that trial? Is that I'm trying to understand, I guess, what's the length? Because it is complex. It's not something, you know, you're not going to put a tablet into somebody and hope for the best and cross your fingers. What is it? It's phase one, phase two. How long does phase two go for? And what are the the timeline for this? Is it a long, long time? Because some of these things take a while.
Yeah. So what we know at the moment is that pancreatic cancer patients in a lot of the clinical trials that, you know, we are familiar with, go through 5 or 6 rounds of treatment, and each round of treatment is 1 month. So, you know, it's likely that a patient, you know, for the sake of estimation on the trial, is going to be on the trial for about 6 months. Right. We're not going to recruit the whole trial, you know, on day one. When we start recruiting, we'll be recruiting over a period of time. So we're doing the modeling at the moment. It's difficult for me to say exactly how long that trial is going to take. But in a sense, the longer it takes, the better, because that means that the patients are doing well and surviving.
Well, and that's key, isn't it? Well, yeah. We have an investor audience listening today. As I said right at the start, the ASX code is ATX. From an investor's point of view, we've talked about the drug, we've talked about what you're doing there, the success of the fact that you've gone through phase one and going into phase two, which is a massive milestone. For investors, what is the company looking like at the moment from a strength and I guess a balance sheet and all that sort of stuff? But why should investors go, all right, this is serious, this is going to go places?
Yeah. So with reference to the balance sheet and so forth, we'll be releasing our quarterly 4C statement next week. Okay. And I'll be providing another webinar at that time. We'll release the details to the market early next week.
Okay.
Over the next quarter or so, though, I expect that we'll be disclosing the details of the phase two trial design, in which we will, you know, explain the trial to the market and how we plan to advance AMP-945 towards commercialization. We're also planning over the next 3 to 6 months some important regulatory interactions, which we hope to be able to speak about once we've had them. And, you know, as always, we've got, and as I mentioned before, we've got several lines of exploratory work going on involving AMP-945 and its stablemate that we haven't mentioned yet, AMP-886, which is another molecule that we're developing. We've got several lines of exploratory work going on, and if anything notable arises from those, we'll also be letting the market know. But the main, I guess, thrust of the company at the moment is getting ready for this phase two stage of the company.
Well, you mentioned it, AMP. I love the AMP. I love it. AMP 886. What's that?
It's a stablemate, a very close relative of AMP 945. It hasn't yet entered clinical development, but it has some unique attributes that we are seeking to exploit. So it's the second inhibitor that we've got in our portfolio, and we're working on that.
All right. Well, we're running out of time, John. It's what I always ask my people I interview. Let's sum it up. What are three reasons why right now is a good time for our audience, who are all investors, to look at Amplia Therapeutics as potentially a good time to get involved?
So first of all, if I look around the ASX at other companies in our sector with phase two assets, I can see a significant potential for re-rating of Amplia's stock as we move forward into phase two efficacy trials. So compare Amplia to other companies that have similar stage development assets, and I think you'll expect us to be re-rated. Secondly, we've got an outstanding management team and board, you know, who have the right mix of expertise required for successful drug development. This team's got such a deep understanding of clinical and regulatory matters, and together with all the elements of really sound project management, which, you know, we require in order to efficiently apply the company's resources. So second reason I would say is the quality of the management team and board. Thirdly, I guess investing in Amplia is an opportunity to play a role in bringing new drugs to patients who need them. You know, at the end of the day, we're an ethical company that wants the best for both investors and patients. And, you know, as a fellow investor myself, I'm really proud to be part of that. So I think that's a good solid third reason to invest in Amplia.
You just mentioned that you've invested. I just want to finish up. What percentage do board and management have of Amplia? Is that something you can let me know?
It's around the 5 to 6% mark overall.
Okay. I'd say. Mm. All right. So that what I often say to our investors out there is, if you've got a strong board, if they've got skin in the game, that's two ticks. You've got a company here that is going into potentially re-rating. Nothing certain in this world, but they're going into phase two trials. That's a very strong tick. And it's a very interesting area that you're working in, something that's actually quite close to my heart. So congratulations on all the progress that you're making, John. It's been very interesting chat with you today. And I really appreciate you joining me on Small Caps.
Thanks, Kerry. I really enjoyed the discussion too. Thank you very much.